As you can see from the title, we have two different subjects on today's presentation. We're talking about the commercial dairying industry, and we're talking about the research station. And really, these two are intermingled very closely because we have a commercial dairy on our unit. We have 220 milk cows and about 200 replacement cattle, so this milk is shipped commercially. It's not used on the station. It's not made into cheese and ice cream. In fact, it comes to New Orleans to Brown Velvet, a processing plant no more than about 2 miles from here where we're located. And Brown Velvet is famous for their ice cream. So we're a commercial dairy just like the dairies that suffered through the hurricane, and we had some of the same issues they did. But today what I'm going to try to do is separate the issues of the dairy industry and those of the station and kind of talk how we interacted with each other during this crisis period. We have about 7 houses located on the station, and when the hurricane hit, 3 of us stayed and everyone else evacuated. So we had 3 out of 25 employees that we had at that time that stayed. So it was an interesting time for us at that particular area. This gives you a little bit, and Dr. Gridley's talked a little bit about this. This gives you an indication of where the dairy industry is. This is known, these yellow marked counties and parishes are known as the New Orleans Milk Shed. It actually encompasses about 3 parishes or counties in Louisiana and 4 or 5 counties in Mississippi. At one time, as recently as 1990, this was the 10th largest milk shed in the United States. Of course, a lot of these dairies have gone out, and the numbers have declined from about 2,000 dairies down to about 400 dairies when the hurricane actually hit. So in 2005, there were about 400 dairies in this area right here, supplying milk, almost all fluid milk, very little powder or cheese was produced from these dairies in this area, about 80% fluid, 85%, something in that neighborhood. I'm not that good at drawing, but this is New Orleans right here, that pretty little red star, and this is Baton Rouge, and this little cross would be where the research station is located. So you can see we're about 65 miles almost due south of New Orleans, and Baton Rouge is about 85 miles southwest of us. So that gives you a little bit of an idea of where we're located. The research station is primarily, and the dairy industry focuses on grazing dairies. The dairy industry has been there about 60 or 70 years. It dates back to the time when dairy cows were turned out into the woods and they roamed free in that area, and then as time went along, annual ryegrass became one of the dominant forages in the area, followed by hybrid Bermuda grasses. And to this date, those are really the two primary forages grown in the area for our dairy cows. Only about 15 to 20% of the dairies practice confinement feeding. It's primarily a grazing-based dairy. So these guys were real vulnerable to things like drought and that kind of thing. As you can see, this is a typical scene around a dairy in Louisiana, large creeks with big trees along the perimeter of the farms, and these do not sustain well under high wind-type conditions. And that's exactly what we had. As Dr. Knight mentioned earlier, the storm came in basically on the Mississippi-Louisiana line. As you can see, this was called the second landfall right in this area about right here. And by that time, the winds had diminished. It was a Class 3 category storm. But if you followed the direct impact along this area up into this far, we had 100-mile-an-hour winds up into this far into the state of Mississippi. Our parishes are located right here, here, and here. And as you went further west, the winds, of course, were less. As Dr. Knight mentioned, we had real strong winds on the eastern side. But if you went going over this way, they got lighter. So Washington Parish, which is the number 2 parish in the state as far as dairies at the time of the hurricane, had about 100 dairies. The parish next to it had about 225 dairies. These were the areas that were impacted the most heavily from the storm. What kind of damages did we experience? And we've covered some of these things today. We had a lot of buildings that went down. These were hay barns, feeding barns, milking barns, the parlors themselves. As you went further east into Mississippi, we actually had concrete barns that were torn down, roofs came off. A lot of those dairymen went out of business immediately. There was a small pocket of about 20 to 25 dairies over in the eastern counties of Mississippi, north of where Dr. Knight's station is headquartered. About 80% of them went out immediately. They sold their cows at auction right away, and a few of them sent cows to neighboring farms where they were able to keep going, where they didn't have such destruction. As you came further west over to our area, most of it was hay barns that went down, and we'll see some pictures of that. But mostly your older structures that couldn't not handle like 60 to 80 or 90 mile an hour winds were the kinds that went down. So our guys really were able to still milk their cows, but their hay might have been covered. You know, their stuff might have been really damaged in terms of that part of the situation. Fence damage was huge along through there. A lot of people talked about how their cows never had grazed any better because they were grazing in the neighbor's fields, because cows went everywhere all across the board. It was really a tremendous thing as far as that goes. As Dr. Guidry mentioned, the animal loss to the dairy industry was really fairly low. We're probably talking less than $1 million in terms of the animal loss. There was a few of them pinned under trees, a few of them the barns collapsed on, and it did kill some animals outright. But that was really not the major detriment to the dairy industry. The short-term effects and the short-term costs were fairly minimal, really, as far as the dairy industry and the amount of milk that was lost. This is where the long-term effects took place, which really ballooned the negative effects of the dairy industry and put a real strong impact on the dairy industry and caused them to go out prematurely of the business. And here we're talking about things like more mastitis in the cows, more disease situations, poor reproduction, poor production, all those kinds of things impacted on the dairy cows. They're still having an impact in some herds today. So even though a lot of times it's hard to document economically what those are, and the payback programs don't cover those a lot of times, many of our dairymen are still suffering from those losses. The major thing that happened that caused a lot of these losses initially was electrical power failure. And if you look at the areas where the duration of electrical power, if you went toward the Mississippi line, most of those people lost power for about 30 days. As you came further west, over in our area, we were without power for 15 days at our research unit. That was during Katrina. During Hurricane Rita, we were only out of power one day at our unit. So that gives you an idea of how long people were without power. If you go further east, some of them were even more than 30 days. That can play havoc on a dairy, because cows have to be milked twice a day. It's not quite like beef cattle, where you don't have to have electricity to accomplish what you're trying to accomplish with your cattle operation. So it's a very, very severe situation. And most of the dairymen actually had generators. Most dairymen have generators because they have to have them to milk their cows, even if there's a thunderstorm that comes through for 3 hours. They must have generators. So more of the dairymen were in better shape as far as generators go than some of our beef cattle people. This is a typical scene of the tree damage in the area, and I just threw that in. The older standing timber is more brittle, and it snaps off in winds up to 60 to 80 miles an hour. It's going to snap. Your younger timber just kind of bends and folds over. You say, well, what's that got to do with the dairy industry? Well, a lot of these guys, that was secondary income for these people. That was their retirement benefits. And a guy that had $3,000 to $5,000 worth of timber per acre, there goes his retirement plan right there out the window. And so our parishes, as Dr. Guidry mentioned, when you look at Washington, all these parishes just north of New Orleans, about 60 or 100 miles, all those parishes were heavily forested, a lot of pine timber, a lot of hardwood along the rivers. And so the loss of timber was grievous. It was grievous to these people in this particular area. It was very difficult. So that's why I had to mention that. I myself had a little piece of land, 25 acres, probably $30,000 to $40,000 worth of timber on my land. The station lost over $200,000 worth of timber. So, I mean, everybody. There were no exceptions, hardly, to the people in the area that had losses. It was universal. This is a typical kind of scene. That's a dairyman in St. Helena Parish. This is a typical kind of scene that we saw after the hurricane. As Dr. Knight mentioned, most of us were trying to survive in the week after the hurricane, so there were not very many pictures taken of the damage, and we were depressed enough, and we had enough going on. We didn't really go document with digital cameras a lot of what the destruction is. And so a lot of the scenes you see are actually, the pictures you'll see of mine are several weeks or 2 or 3 weeks after the hurricane, when we got power and we could actually start to do something besides survive at that point. But he lost a long barn, actually lost a cow or two under that barn. They weren't all in that barn, but that's pretty typical. See, that's an old barn from the rust on the roof and so forth. This is a scene that's really pretty mild compared to some of them, of the roads, but pretty typical. All the power lines were down in the roads. Trees were covered over the roads. Many people had took two or three days to chainsaw themselves out of these back rural roads in the dairy farms. And that impacted on milk recovery, because milk has to be picked up every day on the farm, or at the very least every other day. Many of these milk trucks could not get into the farm, so that milk had to be dumped. Even if a guy had a generator where he could keep the milk cool, the milk had to be dumped. So the losses were pretty severe from that respect. This is a scene on the station that's pretty typical. That's a new fence going down through there. As you can imagine, we dozered that fence up. So that's the kind of things that you'd have. This happened to be a perimeter field. That was the land. Those trees in the background were the land where I was talking about $200,000 worth of damaged timber. That was prime timber that was just ready to be harvested. Excuse me. If you take a look at the immediate and long-term needs to sustain this dairies after the hurricane, what did the dairymen need? These were the things they needed. More generators, more diesel, more feed, and water. The generators, as I said, most dairies had generators, but most dairies were way underpowered in terms of the generator power that they needed. And there were some dairies that did not have any, because they counted on a neighbor to get a generator. You know, if you get hit, usually your neighbor's not hit, so you can go get his generator. Well, that wasn't the case in this particular instance, because everybody was hit. Everybody was without power. In fact, to make a cell phone call, you had to drive nearly to Baton Rouge to get communication out. That's how bad it was. So we were really isolated. We were isolated in that area. It was like being thrown into the 1850s as far as what your technology could do for you. That's really what happened. As far as the generators were concerned, that was a big need, and that was one that was addressed. I'll talk to you about who addressed it in just a minute. Diesel was rationed almost immediately. Within 48 hours, the local diesel supplies were almost exhausted. So diesel was in high demand. And all the local, within 30 to 50 mile radius of that area, all those people began rationing the diesel and the gasoline. Long lines for gas, the whole nine yards, all the way down. Here again, feed was in short supply. Many of these dairymen, being grazing dairymen, they got their feed from places like Purina and Cargill, and they didn't have on the farm huge supplies. Most of them were just a week supply that they had on the dairy. And as someone mentioned earlier, this hurricane was expected to hit Florida, not us, until within 48 hours after the storm. So most of those dairymen didn't order extra feed, and it was on the weekend, which compounded the problem even worse. So that was a situation that people were fighting long term. In terms of the short term needs, a lot of forage. We were already in a drought when this hurricane hit. In fact, there was a little bit of humor going around, or a little bit of those of you from the southeast will understand this. Oftentimes we wish for a tropical storm. Why do we do that? We wish for a tropical storm because it brings 4 or 5 inches of rain in during a drought. And we were actually hopeful that we would get some rain out of this storm, and that's all we wanted out of it. But we got a lot more than we were bargaining for in this particular instance. So the forage was in short supply already. By fences being down, we could not graze the pastures. A lot of forage barns covered the hay that fell on. So all those things compounded themselves as we went along. In terms of one of the things that we really were shorthanded in terms of right after the storm that most dairymen did not have was people to repair the damage that was caused. Your people like your electricians, the electrician to repair your milking equipment. So there were all kind of shortages. There was equipment being repaired by people on the farm. Very, very difficult to find someone to help you repair your equipment if you had anything going on. And now I'm talking everything from IT, you know, computers, all the way down to milking equipment. In terms of long-term effects, labor for milking. Well, why would labor for milking be short after the hurricane? Well, most of these people that milk cows, the dairymen themselves, about 80% of them really didn't milk their own cows. Only about 1 out of 4 dairymen actually milked their own cows in this state. And that's pretty common, because as you get over 100 cows, you just can't milk your own cows. You have to hire labor. So most of these herds that were larger, most of these herds, a lot of the personnel left. They either evacuated completely and did not come back, or they took jobs with FEMA where they were making 2 to 3 times as much money and just quit the dairy industry. So the labor shortage was a real serious issue in terms of long-term sustainability of the dairy industry. And finally, the third thing long-term was cash flow. And actually, this was a short-term, a mid-term, and a long-term problem. And as Dr. Guidry mentioned earlier, the dairy industry was already on difficult times because of low milk prices, and they were suffering through this at the same time. And actually, cash flow was a major problem. And as you might expect, for at least a week to 10 days after the storm, the banks were closed. There was no way to make transactions, no way to cash a check. A lot of guys had to go to Baton Rouge or somewhere else to get a check cash to get cash. So, I mean, immediately after the storm, cash flow was a serious problem. I mean, just having, even if you had $1 million in the bank, you couldn't get to it. So it was a serious thing. And then on down the line, the low production and the low milk prices all compounded to increase production loss. Well, what kind of resources did dairymen have? This is a time when you find out who your neighbors are and who your friends are. When you have a disaster, you're going to find out who they are. And many dairymen, like myself, had their families from New Orleans and different places come up to fill their house up and be an evacuation center. Some people left from our area and went to Florida and other places. But really, typically, once you get about 50 or 60 miles inland, you don't normally have hurricane-force winds. That's a very, very rare situation, maybe 100 years or 500 years. So at our station in the past 25 years, nearly, that I've been there, we've only had one or two storms that actually had tropical storm wind. So we were considered the evacuation area. Our part of the state was actually considered the evacuation area. So that gives you an idea of the strength of Katrina, the power of it, the size of it, was incredible. So you had to call on everybody. I had my family members help milk. For the first 72 hours, we didn't have any employees that showed up. Not a one. Just the three that lived on the station. Three of us. And I didn't want them to, because it was dangerous to get there. It was not safe, and I didn't want them coming out. In fact, the Ag Center closed the station for 2 weeks, and the employees got pay for the first week, emergency pay. And then the second week, they began coming in. They closed it for a week, that's right. And then the second week, we started back up. So in any case, we didn't have any employees for the fourth day. When the employees were able to come back, they were almost as fondly remembered as the power people that came from Alabama and Arkansas and Oklahoma and California and all over to restore electricity to our area. So we were glad to see some employees after that first 72 hours. These are the order. The reason I put these in this order is this is the order that we had resources to work with as I saw them. This is through my eyes. This may not be the same thing someone else would put up there. They might have a whole different order. But this is the order, for me being there and being in the storm, this is the order that I saw the dairymen receive help in the order. The first thing that dairymen, once they could get cut out of their areas, the next thing that they had access to was the milk co-ops. Particularly the large milk co-op, Dairy Farmers of America, that represented about 80% of the guys shipped their milk to in our area. They had satellite phones. They instantly communicated to Springfield, Missouri, where their headquarters is, and in Knoxville, Tennessee. They mobilized forces to come within 24 hours after it was safe to travel. And I was very impressed with them. And we have a plant there, a DFA plant, in Franklinton, Louisiana, where we're located. And within 24 hours, they started getting generators and extra dairy supplies and things in that area for their dairymen to use. And they not only gave them access to them, they gave dairymen that didn't even ship to them access to that stuff. So one thing that Katrina did, it showed that we can work across lines, whether it's business, Department of Agriculture, USDA, or any other thing. It shows when you have to, you can give up your jealousies, your territorial areas, and everything else, and get the job done. And that's kind of what I'm referring to here. At the state level, the Ag Center was on site with our parish agents, our research personnel, and so forth, and we were involved in the relief effort. Even though we were trying to survive ourselves, we were intimately involved within 2 weeks in dispensing diesel, working with the Department of Agriculture representatives to get it to farmers, and that kind of thing. So we were not only in a survival mode for ourselves, we had responsibilities to our clientele as well. That's why I say that you can't really separate, when you're in one of these disasters, you can't separate your role from the local clientele. You're intimately involved with both. Then, of course, we had the out-of-state donors. Most of these started coming in 2 to 4 weeks after the hurricane, and we're talking about hay. For the stress, we're talking about barbed wire, fencing material, financial aid, all these sorts of things. Christian Farmers of America was down there a few weeks after the storm. So we were really pleased to see these folks coming in. Then you can see what's on the bottom of the list in terms of timeliness. You can expect this in any disaster that hits your area. Your federal people are going to be your last people to get there. And it's important. I mean, they did make a contribution. But FEMA and USDA and those sources were some of the last folks to have an effect. And they do cover fencing. FEMA covers fencing where you had trees fall down. If the tree fell down in the middle of the field, that was considered a shade area and you didn't get covered. So there's a lot of rules with FEMA that are very difficult. So if the tree was along a fence and it damaged it, then you could get that tree removed. So there are a lot of particular rules with that. As far as the crops and forages, they had programs for that through the NRCS, the FSA, to supply some of that. And then this one probably was the last one that was instated in November of 06. And someone told me this from Florida, that when you get ready for your hurricane relief from the USDA, just wait at least 1 year, probably 2 years, before you get it. And it was about 18 months before we had our most significant program, which was this program right here, which was November of 06. And some of our farmers didn't get paid till as recently as the spring of this year, almost 2 years after the hurricane. So, but that was an important program, and it was based on the amount of milk you had of the previous 6 months to the storm, of the same time of year versus the 6 months after the storm. So if you lost, say we're down 20% from July or August through December of 06, of 05 compared to 04, then your payment was based on that amount, which was a good little bit. That's fairly long term. That's about 6 months response. The problem is dairies are still down. Our own research herd is down about 5% now. We were 20% immediately after the storm. We were 10% through the year of 06. I estimate our milk losses were about $100,000. So that's a significant amount. What about the dairies themselves? What about the dairies themselves? How are we on that? We had about a 17% loss in 2005. In 2006, about a 12% exit rate. And our historical exit rate over the last 20 years has been in the 8 to 10% range. So we're getting more down near our historical exit rate here at about 12. And then this year with the high milk prices so far, we're only running a little over 6% exit rate. But as you can see, nearly 30% down from since the hurricane, as I did in that summary. Okay, just a few comments on the Southeast Research Station. Just wanted to show you some of the research and how it was kind of negatively impacted. We do waste management research with replicated dairy lagoons. We have a forage testing lab there where we test forages. We do the typical variety testing things, grazing dairy research, bale silage research. All these things are components of our research. We have a confinement feeding barn where we do cow comfort, like rubber mats as shown here with the cows. And then we have a confinement feeding barn where we do forage intake studies and that kind of thing. What about our plan before the storm? What did we do? This is what we told the people right here. Don't come to work until it's safe. First thing we did, we prepared the generator at the milking parlor, mixed extra feed for the cows, move heifers in the interior fields, put the baby calves in the barn, unplug backup equipment, and order extra fuel. So those are some of that was our plan before the storm. That's kind of what we did. What kind of damage did we have? This is indicative of the damage. We had heifer barns blown down, hay barns extensively damaged. About $250,000 total damage, not counting the timber. I already mentioned a couple hundred thousand dollars for the timber. We lost about 25% of our people in the first 6 months following the Katrina. And we also had budget cuts and frozen positions. So it was a fun time. What about the reaction to the storm? This is kind of what the LSU Ag Center has done since the storm. LSU reaction to hurricane damage at station. They provided fuel, electrical expertise, fencing crews, satellites, accounting ability, and so forth in 2 weeks. The Ag Center really came through. Our central office in Baton Rouge really came through for us after the hurricane. I was very impressed with what they did. Like I say, they sent fencing crews of 10 to 15 people for a couple days. They sent electricians. They sent more generators. Texas A&M donated satellites so that we could get back on the internet in about 2 weeks. It was just fantastic. Within 3 months, all the roof damage was repaired, heifer barns replaced, and so forth. It took about a year to get back up to full numbers on our vacant positions. We just hired an agronomist who's in the office, in the audience today, and we're tickled to have him with us. And we're still in the process of repairing our perimeter fences. Hopefully by this year, we'll have them repaired. We had about 100 acres that we couldn't graze that we've had to, you know, kind of work around till we got those fences and so forth done. As far as the research that was affected, I had a bale silage study going on at the time of the study. On that Sunday morning when the tropical storm winds came in, we canceled that study, weighed the cows off the study, and terminated it about a week or so early. But we really were able to accrue most of the data for that project, so that was a good thing. We had a lot of that wetland that you saw in our waste management area. A lot of our forages that we were using to test, we had some pickerel weed and some things like that that our nutrient management man was using to study cleaning up wastewater lagoon water, and it was all destroyed. And then the other actions were more or less postponements and that kind of thing in terms of the research. In terms, just to conclude, in terms of the lessons learned, and this is probably a fairly good introduction for our next producer, our next speaker. Never underestimate the nature's power, and we won't do that again. We have a lot more stringent system in place now in terms of what our preparations will be. You want to have enough generator power to run all operations. The only one that we don't have right now at the station is the lab, and my understanding is you don't want that kind of power for sensitive equipment, computer-based equipment. It's you're asking for a lot of damage if you have generator power to run a lot of your labs. So we don't have the lab on power right now, but before we had about a third of the station covered. I'd say we have about 80% of the station covered now with generator power since the hurricane. You want to have enough fuel reserves for 2 weeks. We went to our sister stations in Hammond. We went to sister stations as far as 100 miles away with 55-gallon drums, with full of diesel in the back of pickup trucks, and as you know, that's not a real safe. Probably the safety officer probably would have had a coronary now if he'd known about all the things that we had to do to get fuel to the station, but when you're in a crisis situation, you do what you have to do. Keep your chainsaws, fencing material handy, establish a mechanism for communication with the outside world, and have a plan for safety and continuation of operations. Those are the thoughts that I had today. I enjoyed being with you, and if you have any questions later on, I'll be glad to visit with you. Thanks.